In this present crisis, government is not the solution to our problem. Government is the problem.
This is the I Spy Radio Show.
You and I have a rendezvous with destiny.
Keeping an eye on big government.
We the people tell the government what to do. It doesn't tell us.
The trouble with our liberal friends is not that they're ignorant. It's just that they know so much that isn't so.
And now, here is your host, Mark Anderson.
And welcome. Thanks for joining us today. As every week, we help you get a little more intelligence on big government. You know, one of the hallmarks of America is our elections. And what we're learning this year is that, like with so much else that is foundational to America, our elections have come under attack by the left, the Democrat Party. Was it a coordinated effort? Were the Democrats in different states all working together with deep state operatives and the federal and state government to hatch a scheme? Were members of the media part of it? And that's the thing. We don't know. We're just now learning the details. We're trying to get to the bottom of it, unless you're part of the mainstream media, in which case you're sticking your fingers in your ears and refusing to listen, while at the same time claiming there is no evidence. Here's what we know. Not about 2020. Here's what we know about 2016. Stick with me on this. A little rehashing is important. On July 26, 2016, Hillary Clinton hatched a plan to smear Donald Trump by claiming he had ties to the Russians and that Putin wanted him to win. There was no evidence. It was entirely a political smear campaign. She or someone on her staff made it up. But less than 24 hours later, John Brennan, the head of the CIA, was in the White House briefing James Comey and Obama, saying he had learned about it through Russian channels, what Hillary was planning on doing, smear Trump and claim he was working with Russians. Question: how did the Russians find out so quickly what she was doing? Was there a Russian agent on her staff? Were they still hacked into her computers? Regardless, Obama, Comey, and Brennan knew this on July 28. We know this because of Brennan's handwritten notes from that July 28 briefing in the White House. 3 days later, knowing full well the Russia collusion story was a Hillary smear, James Comey opened the FBI investigation into candidate Trump, an operation called Crossfire Hurricane, an investigation by the FBI of a presidential candidate while he was running for office, which had never been done before in the history of the FBI. Question: why would he do that if he had learned 3 days before that it was a Hillary operation? He already knew the answer. Trump wasn't working with the Russians. Hillary was. What followed was a biased investigation into Trump based on literally falsified and fictional evidence, manufactured by foreign agents, Christopher Steele of Britain, and Russians. Our own FBI and CIA began to spin a story that they knew was false. It was picked up by and aided by the media, despite there being no evidence. Anonymous sources could spin the most outrageous lies, and the media would rush with it and run with it and run with it until it became accepted truth. For 4 years, this went on. Tell a lie often enough, and people believe it. And that's why this flashback is important. Here we are in 2020. We know, for a fact, that the Democrats were willing to lie, willing to use our own federal agencies and operatives and the courts of law to try to stage a coup to overturn a duly elected president. Given that, why now is anyone doubting that the Democrats would use state and local agencies to commit election theft? They already tried to steal one election. Why is anyone surprised to think that they would try to steal this election? We're told by the media that voter fraud is rare and small and doesn't impact outcomes of the election. Really? Why didn't you say that in 2016 when you swore the Russians stole the election, or at least could steal elections? If you didn't think election theft was real, then why did you spend the last 4 years endlessly looking for the tiniest breadcrumb that would prove Trump colluded with the Russians? Your own actions prove that you did, at one time, think voter fraud and election theft were very real. Why don't you think that now? What the media did in 2016 and the following years was reprehensible. What they did was try to provide cover for Hillary and the Democrat schemes to overthrow Trump. They wanted to blame the Russians. So they took the easy way out, professionally and mentally. They didn't dig into what they should have, because if they did, it would have challenged their mental schemas, their view of reality. If they had looked, it would have meant that they took a long, hard look at the Democrats who were willing to corrupt the system and the media itself in order to cover their tracks. It would have meant seeing the Democrats in the harsh light of reality that they did, in fact, try to steal an election. And when that didn't work, they tried to stage a coup. And when that didn't work, they tried an impeachment. Seeing the Democrats for who they are would have meant that the media would have had to come face to face with who they themselves had become, willing enablers of a party that tried to cheat and steal our very election. Those are hard things to do, mentally. Mentally, we just don't like to face reality. Like right now, if the mainstream media were to look, they would see that the Democrats are once again trying to steal an election. But the media didn't want to do that in 2016, and they sure aren't going to try to do it in 2020, when it could mean exposing an even bigger fraud, one that most people can hardly imagine. Why? In part because of the media itself. You've been conditioned to think that voter fraud is small and insignificant. How many times have you heard that recently? One person stealing a few votes, or voting for someone else, or the occasional dead person voting. Nothing to see here, right? Except, as we said last week, election theft is entirely different from voter fraud. Instead of a person stealing a vote, one person or a few dozen working inside an agency or for voting machine companies can steal or flip or delete hundreds of thousands of votes. Looking at that would mean some rather uncomfortable questions, because it would mean some sophisticated coordination happened. It would mean tampering with voting machines and the software, because the media wants you to believe there's no such thing as hackers, right? It would mean a conspiracy among Democrats and operatives at agencies who were willing to commit fraud on an epic scale. Can't happen? Again, we've already seen it. It did happen in 2016 when Democrat operatives at agencies were willing to commit fraud on an epic scale by claiming that Trump colluded with Russians. The question isn't whether election happened, it's why it did happen again. If the media had been concerned about election theft or vote or foreign interference like they said they were in 2016, why didn't they look into it? Like, here's something. Did you know that 28 states have their voter rolls on a server in Germany? Did you know that? I didn't. I had no idea. But that's what we've learned so far. Or did you know prior to this election that a voting machine operator, Dominion, was a company originally created to steal votes? It came about when Hugo Chavez lost the referendum and he said never again. So Dominion Voting Machines Company sprang into being to make sure that he did never lose again, because it would change votes electronically after they were cast. How are we only just now learning about this? How do we not know this was even possible? How do we not know this if the media was so concerned about foreign election interference? How did the media and all that investigation of foreign interference not stumble across these two basic facts? Where were the endless media stories about our election systems being operated by foreign entities? But they didn't look into it because they had made up their minds that Trump was guilty, and so they only looked for means to prove that Trump was guilty. So they looked at evidence through We Hate Trump colored glasses, and surprise, surprise, the more they looked, the more they hated Trump until they came to a mental island where all they could do is hate Trump. And they couldn't and can't get off that island because the only row vote off of it was to accept that Trump wasn't who they thought he was. The problem now is time. It took years to pry open the federal agencies and get the evidence to prove the Russia collusion was a lie and that it was a lie started by the Democrats. That handwritten note from John Brennan proving beyond the shadow of a doubt that it was a Hillary operation from the get-go was only released a couple of months ago. Now the Trump team has to prove in court a massive scheme by the Democrats. To be clear, the scheme itself wasn't complex. It was rather simple. The Democrats hacked into systems and stole an election. But to think the Democrats would really blatantly do that is a big mental hurdle for a lot of people. It's one thing to steal a few hundred votes, but millions? That's going to be hard for some people in the court of public opinion to fathom. The human mind doesn't easily grasp large, complex situations all in one shot. No one starts with trigonometry. They start with addition, subtraction, multiplication, and division. That's why reminding people of what happened in 2016 is so critical. There's already the mental schema that, yes, somebody tried to steal an election. We have more questions than answers right now, and the media isn't asking any of them. We'll deal with some of those coming up next. And welcome back. This is the I Spy Radio Show. We're looking today at the media and their response to the 2020 election, or lack of response, when it comes to stopping the steal. As I said in that last segment, we have more questions than answers right now, unless you're the media, in which case you're not interested in answers. It's settled. An anonymous source was all you needed, and you totally believed that the Russians hacked our elections and stole it for Trump. But this time, somehow, piles of evidence just isn't enough. We do have a guest coming up later in the show, Carrie Sheffield. She is with Just the News. That's John Solomon's news organization. She was in the room for Giuliani's and the Trump lawyers' explosive press conference on Thursday, so be sure to stay tuned for that. You know, I asked in that last segment whether the media was part of this election theft, and by that, I don't necessarily mean that they were in on it, necessarily. But looking back at 2016 and the years following, they were clearly willing participants, or useful idiots, in the scheme to take down President Trump with allegations of Russia collusion. Remember, the anonymous sources in newspapers was part of the circular logic the FBI used to get warrants. The FBI anonymously leaked information to the press, who dutifully printed it. The FBI then used those news stories to tell the court, well, the press is running it, so it must be true. The media was wrong about Russia collusion, because of course it was fake. They were wrong about Ukraine. They lied extensively and by omission to cover up for Joe Biden and Hunter Biden in Ukraine and China and Russia and elsewhere. So were they willing partners in the attempt to steal the 2020 election? That's one of the questions that needs answering. I do find it odd, though, that going into the election, there was story after story about Trump being way ahead on election night, only to lose his lead in the days that followed. We also heard a lot of coverage about how rare voter fraud was, and here we are. Odd, isn't it, how they just happen to know exactly how this is all played out. Looking back on it with hindsight, it feels, and according to Democrats, feelings are facts, it feels like a coordinated effort to provide media cover for what was going to happen. Was it? You know, emails would tell the story. We know there were emails between FBI agents and the press during the Russia collusion narrative. I wonder if anyone has thought to subpoena press records. As I said, we have more questions than answers right now. Like, how did multiple states all have the exact same flip of votes at the same time? If there was a change of votes of, say, 7,333 votes from Trump to Biden, and that same 7,333 figure appeared in multiple states at the same time, wouldn't you be suspicious? What are the odds? Or another question, why did more than 186,000 votes all suddenly appear in Michigan for one candidate and only one candidate? Why did those sudden one-candidate spikes appear in five Democrat-controlled swing states after a pause in the voting? Speaking of the pause, this seems to be a key issue. It happened on election night, and according to Sidney Powell, this pause happened because there was such a massive lead by President Trump that they needed to stop the count to reconfigure the algorithm that would steal or add the number of votes necessary to overcome Trump's lead. In other words, their voting software had been inserting and switching votes all night, using an algorithm to do so quietly and make it look natural. But because Trump tipped the scales, their insertions, if continued at the pre-configured rate, would not overcome his lead. So they had to stop to reconfigure and then insert a massive amount to make up ground. Why this is really interesting is because Sidney, during Thursday's press conference, said that after the election and as they began to dig into this, she was contacted personally by officials in other countries who said that's exactly what happened to us here. We were leading, there was a pause, and then a giant insertion of votes for our opposition magically appeared. The same countries where Dominion voting machines were operating. Remember what happened in 2016? Pennsylvania paused their count back then. And no one could figure it out then. Why did they stop? Just call the race. The votes outstanding, even if they all went for Joe, would not have been enough to win. But it just sat there for hours. Could it be that that was a case of what we saw this year? They paused the count to try to figure out if they could insert enough votes to overcome Trump's lead. But the whole world was watching. Did they just pull the plug on that plan? Because if they tried, everyone would see it. It would be out there in the open. No cover. Plus, Trump already had enough leads in the other states that he was going to win the Electoral College. So they bit the bullet and let it go through. Remember, in August of 2016, 3 months before the election, the Democrats working with Hillary from inside the FBI, Peter Strzok had already sent a text to his lover that they had an insurance plan if Trump somehow won. That, of course, was the plan to cripple him with the fake Russia collusion. But in 2020, they did have cover to insert votes. The COVID contingency plan. Using mail-in ballots, you could cover any number of scenarios to make up and overcome the difference. Question. Why was there such similarity in how things unfolded in the key Democrat swing states? A pause in voting, trucks filled with ballots showing up with votes only for Biden. Republican observers not allowed to observe, in some cases being kicked out. Or if they were allowed to watch, it was from a distance and in, set up in corrals to keep them at a distance. As Giuliani put it on Thursday, did every Democrat in all of those states separately have the exact same ideas? Did they independently come up with all of those ideas? Question. Why were there so many overvotes in some of these Democrat-controlled precincts? Most precincts in a normal election year never reach 100% participation. But in Michigan and Wisconsin precincts, they had 100% to 300%, and in at least one case, 350% participation. Isn't that a little odd? But the media is not questioning that. Why isn't the media showing any curiosity? Why are they not reporting facts? Why are they deriding what they call the lack of evidence? Really? There are hundreds, perhaps thousands of sworn affidavits by eyewitnesses. The word of one person seemed more than enough for the media to believe Justice Kavanaugh was guilty. And she only had four affidavits supporting her, one of whom was from her husband. There are hundreds of affidavits supporting allegations of voter fraud and election theft. But the media doesn't care about that. Somehow that's not evidence. Question. The software on the Dominion voting machines is Smartmatic. Why won't Smartmatic reveal who its owners are? Why are the owners protected by a web of offshore businesses to hide their identities? Why are people who work for Dominion deleting that work experience from their LinkedIn profiles? And why did Dominion not show up for a committee hearing on Friday in the Pennsylvania legislature? And, according to Rush Limbaugh, why did they close their offices and get out of town? Some of that may be because of time. The Trump team has until December 8th to prove all this. And if Dominion can get out of town and stay out of town until after the election, it would throw a wrench in proving election theft. It took 4 years to get the smoking gun evidence in the Russia collusion, that handwritten note from John Brennan. But if anyone can do it, I think Giuliani, who took down mafia bosses, and Sidney Powell, who has been right on everything she said about the FBI and what they did to Michael Flynn, and the rest of Trump's team are more than up to the task. Up next, Carrie Sheffield, a reporter for Just the News, who was in that room for that Giuliani press conference on Thursday. It had damning evidence coming out of that, although you wouldn't know it listening to Fox News, which is why you shouldn't. We'll talk to Carrie coming up next. We're talking now to Carrie Sheffield. She's a White House correspondent for Just the News and anchor of the nationally syndicated TV show Just the News AM. It airs live on Monday through Friday from 9 to 10 a.m. Eastern. It's on Dish Network, Pluto TV, Roku, Apple TV, Fire TV, and you can also catch it online at americasvoice.news. Carrie, thanks for joining us today.
Mark, thanks for having me.
Yeah, so you're the anchor for Just the News AM. We know John Solomon quite well and justthenews.com quite well as well. But tell our audience about America's Voice. Is that part of Just the News?
So Real America's Voice is our distributor. So we have a content deal where we have programs like my own, which, as you mentioned, is a daily Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. to 10 a.m. Eastern program, and you can catch it on VOD after. But mine and several other programs are a suite of programs we create at Just the News, which John Solomon is our founder. Mm-hmm. And then our content is syndicated and distributed on Real America's Voice. And they are the ones who carry the programming across Dish and all these other networks that you just mentioned.
Gotcha. Okay. We have watched with fascination Just the News and their rise to stardom. I mean, John started that only, I think, about a year and a half or so ago. So it's been fascinating to see how fast that has grown.
Less than that, actually. It was February. So about, I think it's February 17th.
Of this year.
Really sprung of this year.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yep. Wow. That does not seem possible. I really thought it was like last year. So how are conservative-leaning news organizations like Just the News and America's Voice perceived among like the White House press corps and the wider mainstream media? And how are you guys treated by news sources themselves?
Well, it's really interesting because as our name suggests, we're called Just the News. We don't want to lean in any direction, but we've just seen earlier this year, I did an interview with the editor-in-chief of Gallup, and Gallup has tracked sentiment toward the press for decades now. And he said going back at least until 1970, I don't know if they tracked it in the 60s or not, but going back now for decades, that the trust in the media has been eroding over time among conservatives and Republicans because they feel that their needs and their questions are not being asked. And so it's very interesting to see the polarization within the press that if you ask certain questions, you are perceived as being certain, as slanted in a certain way. But when you look at who is credentialed within the White House Correspondents Association, the overwhelming majority of the members of that organization are perceived by Republicans and conservatives as leaning to the left. And so for many of them, they feel like their voice is not being heard, their questions are not being asked. When you look at, for example, the famous dinner, they didn't have it this year, the big in-person dinner where they bring a comedian to roast the president. There was the example of Michelle Wolf, who just excoriated in a very personal terms members of the White House team, and President Trump did not show up, but she also made lots and lots of pro-abortion jokes that really crossed the line for a lot of conservatives that went way beyond the idea of, you know, being a bipartisan, lighthearted roast. And so it really kind of disrupted the norms, because it's a phrase that you hear over and over in the media, that within the media that leans to the left, they say that President Trump is always eroding or destructing norms. And we certainly see that for a lot of conservative and Republican-leaning folks, the mainstream media is failing them because they don't respect their norms.
Right, right. Well, it's not surprising that trust has been eroded there. We have seen the last 4 years where the mainstream media has been salivating and reporting endlessly about Russia collusion and on and on. And so they start from the principle that, yes, Russia could have interfered with our election. And now they don't seem to show any intellectual curiosity whatsoever over the possibility that, yes, this election was interfered with. So I think they... It's not surprising that trust is eroded there when they're clearly showing their own bias. Speaking of biases, we've watched with somewhat awe, I guess, in the sense that Fox News now seems to be suddenly trying very hard to get back into the mainstream media cocktail clubs. We've seen a lot of anchors on Fox News suddenly coming out actually against President Trump, whereas before the election they were kind of keeping that in the closet, so to speak. How does Fox News want to be perceived by the White House Corps and the mainstream media, you think?
Well, it's really interesting, because even just a few weeks before the election, I was there in the White House briefing room, and I heard John Roberts, who's the senior White House correspondent for Fox News, he called the president, he used the phrase, the president's favorite boogeyman, the question of electoral fraud. So he called the phrase of electoral fraud and concerns around fraud and mail-in balloting and ballot harvesting and just all of the many, you know, according to a bipartisan report that was chaired by Secretary Baker and also former Democratic President Jimmy Carter, this bipartisan commission before 2020, the commission said that mail-in voting is the biggest danger for fraud. And so when you have a Democrat saying it, somehow that's protecting, again, Democratic lowercase d norms. But when a Republican says it, it's a boogeyman, according to Fox News. And so that perked my ears up when I heard him say that, because I thought, wow, isn't that a journalist's job to really look at questions of, electoral integrity? And you're right, the level of intellectual curiosity just is certainly not there at all here on domestic issues. When you look at our founding documents, they call about concerns of enemies who are foreign and domestic. Mm-hmm. And so you certainly want to make sure that even just to improve public trust in the electoral process, that there is a free and fair count here. So no matter, you know, we obviously want to be in a country where there is no or very minuscule, we don't want any fraud. But, you know, if half of the country or very significant portions of it don't believe that a free and fair process is taking place, there needs to be safeguards to assure them that, yes, indeed, this did happen, instead of just taking this as gospel right off the bat. And it's interesting, just today, here on Friday, the White House spokeswoman, Kayleigh McEnany, had a press conference, and she talked about this question of an orderly transition of power. And she pointed out that from their perspective, President Trump was never given an orderly transition of power, that his presidency was never accepted as legitimate. She ticked through the list of things like the Obama administration's surveillance of the Trump campaign and the use of FISA warrants through doctored material. So FISA abuse applications that were filed and approved using false information, as well as the botched Flynn investigation and surveillance, and then the Steele dossier that was proven to be false. So just over and over, this question of an orderly transition of power has been called into question. And so I think no matter what happens with this election, these questions of, again, lowercase d democratic norms are certainly up for debate right now.
Yes, they sure are. I hope Democrat norms have not become theft is okay as long as I get a cut. All right, everyone stay with us. We'll have more with Kerry Sheffield, the anchor of Just the News AM. If you're done with Fox News and their anti-Trump bias and you're looking for a new news source, might I recommend Just the News and America's Voice? Kerry Sheffield is White House correspondent for Just the News and also the anchor of the nationally syndicated TV show Just the News AM, which airs Monday through Friday, 9 to 10 a.m. Eastern on Dish Network, Pluto TV, Roku, Apple TV, Fire TV, and directly on americasvoice.news. We left that last segment there talking about Democrat norms are up for debate. And that to me has been very concerning is that, you know, back when the whole Russia collusion thing happened and they were saying that Russia interfered with the election and so forth, I didn't think so. I didn't see any evidence, but I was at least willing to explore the possibility because if that had happened, we needed to know. And so why is it that the media is not asking that same question now is if there's voter fraud, why don't they want to know that? Instead, they've gone with this. They have a foregone conclusion that clearly it didn't happen. So where's the curiosity? I mean, when you've talked with the media and you know, I'm sure that, you know, some of your colleagues, they were big supporters of the Russia collusion thing. So why is it they were so willing to accept that, which was based largely on anonymous sources and a fake dossier and all of this other evidence that was manufactured or just simply falsified, like the Alpha Bank theory, that's been proven to be incorrect. And where are their heads? Why are they so unwilling to look at this?
Well, again, I believe it has to do with the lens upon which you are looking at the world, because if you fundamentally believe that Donald Trump is an illegitimate person, then of course you are more than willing to accept that everything is legitimate to therefore remove him. And so this question of the fourth estate that the press is meant to be a watchdog against power, that was something that attracted me as a journalist to the profession, and I studied it in undergrad. And then I moved to Washington. My first job out of college was working for the Hill newspaper. And I quickly realized, I also went on to Politico when they were a startup, and I very quickly realized that my colleagues here in the press corps were not journalists. They were truly advocates. They were activists and they were advocates. This was during the George W. Bush administration, and I just saw the level of animosity they had for the worldview, again, of anybody who had a more center-right worldview, the comments and the questions, just the internal discussions that I heard from members of the press corps. There was no intellectual curiosity for hearing the other side. And again, if you're talking about George W. Bush, and it is a conservative administration or conservative leaning, and then you see just the contrast of how they then treated Barack Obama. Again, I'm all for holding people in power accountable. So if you want to hold George W. Bush accountable, you want to hold Donald Trump accountable, sure. But you don't treat a Democrat like Barack Obama with kid gloves. You don't look the other way for numerous scandals and say, folks, there's nothing to see here.
Yeah, I've looked at those press conferences in the White House and just aghast at what I see. The lack of respect for the leader of the free world, where they're shouting at him, interrupting him. I don't recall reporters ever shouting at or interrupting Obama. I just don't understand that. Even if you think that he's illegitimate, there needs to be some level of respect for the office itself, and yet we see none of that.
Well, and it's interesting because there's been a conversation this whole year, and John Solomon, my boss, who I worked for way back in 2008 at the Washington Times, and it's an honor to work for him again, he said this publicly, and some leaders from other organizations like One American News have said that there is a case to be made for a possible alternative to the White House Correspondents Association because, you know, there is a case to be made for the lack of decorum that the White House Correspondents Association showed throughout the duration of this President Trump's term, possibly first term. I think they had high hopes that there would be, over the course of his presidency, the ability to have a relationship with the press. But I think rather than moving proactively to have more balance, they just stuck it out, you know, whether it was Sean Spicer, and then the approach to have no press conferences, under Stephanie Grisham, that kind of filled by left-leaning, again, intellectually incurious people. And so instead of kind of going to either extreme, I think this year there was a sense that in a second term, they would sort of clean house and say, we're going to have a press room and a press corps that's more balanced. And we'll see what happens with this election. But I do think in a second term, that would be a priority.
Well, that would be great. And I look at this, you know, the evidence that we saw yesterday on Thursday, I mean, with Giuliani's press conference and all that. I mean, I thought that was really damning, what he laid out there. And of course, these are allegations. And, you know, to use the legalese, you know, they have to now make that case in court. But you were there in the room yesterday. What did you think of the presentation?
Well, it's so interesting because I was really focused on the constitutional arguments they were making, things around the 14th Amendment, the Equal Protection Clause, things around Article 1, Section 4, around the legislative authority over elections as opposed to judicial authority in Pennsylvania, for example, who has the legal right under the Constitution to make electoral law changes. And the Constitution clearly says in Article 1, Section 4, the legislature, not the state Supreme Court of Pennsylvania or any state. So I was really interested in their constitutional arguments. But a number of my colleagues, when you see their coverage, they were more interested in really Rudy Giuliani's makeup and his hair dye that appeared to be, you know, dripping down his cheeks. And it was a very hot room. It was the ventilation wasn't great. It was in the lobby of the RNC. So, again, it's the most superficial things that have been focused on was his style and his literally hair and makeup.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, wow, you know, if it was a woman, you'd say the sexist card, but, you know, just going after the superficial. But
you do that, though, when you have no curiosity about what is actually being said. You do that as a mental safeguard, so that way you don't have to deal with the what is obviously there in front of you. It seems.
Well, that was Margaret Thatcher, Prime Minister Thatcher. That was her famous phrase: was that I know that once someone has started attacking me, they have no other arguments left on my policy, so just going after the person. So, in terms of the evidence and the affidavits on my show this morning, I had the chairman of the FEC, the Federal Election Commission. So he oversees the regulation of fundraising and money in campaigns federally for the whole country. He's the chairman. And he said on my show this morning, he said, and I'm going to do more reporting about this, but he said that according to his reading of what's happened with the evidence, when you look at the affidavits, the level of expertise, he said in a court of law, you have experts who are brought in as witnesses. Mm-hmm. And so he said he called it irrefutable evidence of fraud taking place. He said that legally in the court of law, there is a process for when someone has this threshold, they've met the threshold of such a high standard of evidence that there is the court has to take it very seriously, and they have to go through, he called it, again, it's jargon, it's a 12B6 motion. It's the initial phase, and he believes, according to his read on the evidence, they've overcome that. And then you get to the summary judgment phase, and that's where, you know, there's a compressed timeline here because of the December 8th meeting of the electors and the December 14th voting of the electors. So the compressed timeline, and by his read of the evidence, all of the affidavits, the statistical evidence, he said there's compelling evidence for fraud here, and that the courts, again, it's a two-front battle for the Trump campaign, because there's the court of public opinion and then there's the court of law. And we've seen over and over with this administration that he very often gets victory in court, even though the media has already played the jury and rejected it.
Yeah. Well, that seems to be the common theme right now, that the Democrat media want to say that there's just no evidence of widespread voter fraud. But unfortunately, we're up against the clock, so we'll have to save that for the next segment. Everyone stay with us. We'll have more with Carrie Sheffield of Just the News AM. Stay with us. Talking to Carrie Sheffield. She's the White House correspondent for Just the News and anchor of the nationally syndicated TV show Just the News AM, which airs live Monday through Friday from 9 to 10 a.m. And, you know, going on to that last segment, we talked about the evidence that is coming forward, a lot of which is outlined in the Thursday press conference by Giuliani and some other Trump lawyers. And you were saying how the media is essentially playing the jury, judging the jury, and is rejecting the evidence out of hand. And this "there is no evidence" meme by the media seems to have even infected Fox News, even on Tucker Carlson, apparently. I didn't see it, but apparently he tried to have Sidney Powell on and wanted her to lay out all of the evidence. And it got rather contentious in the negotiations in the back and forth whether or not she'd be on there. So here's the thing. What kind of evidence does the mainstream media need? And what would be so overwhelming to convince them of overwhelming evidence of election theft? And would they believe it if it was laid out in front of them?
Well, absolutely. That's the big question. And the argument is to say that, well, they've got some one-off affidavits. Maybe it's a witness here, a witness there. There's small-scale, garden variety is the phrase that the Secretary of State in Pennsylvania used. So you got garden variety fraud, or maybe it was just a couple ballots here, a little tweaks there, that wouldn't have really affected the outcome of the races, because when you're looking at the gaps of the sizable gaps in the lead, so in Pennsylvania and in Florida, I believe in Pennsylvania it was about 70,000 votes, and in Georgia it was about 14,000 votes, and in Minnesota, I believe 130,000 votes or so. But the margins, they basically said, well, just a little bit of fraud, 146,000 votes in Michigan, sorry. The acceptable levels of fraud, as long as it doesn't change the margin, then it's no big deal to them. And the Trump campaign's thinking is, well, we've got enough evidence here, especially, for example, in Pennsylvania. What Rudy said yesterday was that from their understanding and reading of the data, there is the possibility that Trump won by 300,000 votes. And so that's pretty massive levels of fraud that they're mm-hmm. alleging. So, it's, has to be. Sorry.
I was just going to say, I think the difference here is the media has been saying, conditioning people to think that voter fraud doesn't really happen. And when it does, it's such a small thing, it wouldn't change the election. But here's the key difference this year is that, you could have one or two people working on those machines and changing hundreds of thousands of votes. That's a big difference. So what would prove it in the media's mind to show that, yes, there was massive voter fraud?
Well, one example that I just heard in the mainstream liberal media, and it's funny, the word mainstream, I think up for debate. I should say the word liberal media, but this recount in Georgia, and even the word recount versus audit is something that's been up for debate, because yes. the state has been calling it an audit, but the Trump campaign has said, if you're just recounting garbage votes, it's sort of garbage in, garbage out, then it's not an actual right. audit. And the big issue in Georgia is this question of signature match. So when you look at what happened with this recount in Georgia, the margin did not change. I think it went from about 14,000 down to around 13,000, a little bit more victory for Biden. And so the left has been saying, well, this is just evidence then. This was a hand recount. So what about Dominion? There's no glitches here. If these were all hand recounted, you can't ascribe this to glitches in the computer. You can't just say some magical votes were switched with Dominion here in Georgia. So it really is a state-by-state issue because the Dominion issue, I think, has been alleged more in other places like Michigan and right. Pennsylvania. But what were you going to say?
Oh, I was just going to say, we only got about a minute here with you before you have to go. So in terms of the voter fraud, the election theft, Is there any evidence that would convince the mainstream media that this did occur, that all of these electronic votes were switched from Trump to Biden, that sort of thing? What evidence would convince them?
Well, that's a big question on this Dominion voting system, because we I spoke with Kyle Becker, who's been an independent journalist and reporting really forward-looking on this Dominion question. Dominion is the way that Sidney Powell explained it. It's engineered to make it so that there is no digital audit trail for you to trace how it was manipulated digitally. So I think the president's approach that Giuliani is really more focused on, the campaign, because Boris Epstein made the point today, the campaign legal team is actually different from Sidney. Sidney is actually representing the president in his personal capacity, and Giuliani and the Trump legal team for the campaign itself is more focused on these issues of the in-person fraud, the paper ballot issue. So look for more of that going forward, and the paper ballot versus the digital, it could very well be there's some digital fraud on the Dominion front. It's just a more difficult road to climb at this, or hill to climb, road to hoe, however analogy you want to make at this point.
Well, certainly within the larger public, that's going to be a hard thing to prove. But, you know, listening to you, it just reminds me of a line from my dissertation that I hope to finish one day, is that the truth will never convince someone who is determined to believe a lie. And I think that's what we're seeing here with the mainstream media. Carrie Sheffield, I want to thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you, Mark. Appreciate it.
Okay, everyone stay with us. We'll wrap things up after this. We'll have an excerpt from that contentious press conference on Thursday, including the question that Carrie asked, and some news about iSpy Radio. Before we go, I wanted to share with you Carrie's question from Thursday's press conference. It's an important question, but the answers are very interesting. Take a listen.
Speak for just a minute. In terms of the level of corruption we are looking at here, we have no idea how many Republican or Democratic candidates in any state across the country paid to have the system rigged to work for them. These people didn't do this just to take control. They make one heck of a lot of money off of it. Think about the global interests behind your own news organizations. Think about the pressure being brought to bear on from the social media companies to shut down free speech on any challenge to the election. This is a massive, well-funded, coordinated effort to deprive we the people of the United States of our most fundamental right under the Constitution to preserve this republic that we all cherish. It is of the greatest concern. It is the 1775 of our generation and beyond. I can only hear one person at the time. I'm going to take the one with the hands raised.
I'm with Just the News.
Yes.
So question for you, Sydney. First, on the issue of the machines, do you plan to have, are you seeking a court order to either seize or subpoena or just to gain access to any of these machines in any of these contested districts? Have you begun that process? And when can we expect a timeline on that? And then for you, Mr. Mayor, you mentioned in Wisconsin and in Michigan these issues of overvoting. Where can we learn more about this? You're saying 150, 200%?
Up to 350% in some places.
Where would we get access to that data? And then to what extent were those people who showed up to vote in person? Because in Michigan, for example, they did allow same-day registration.
Yes, well, the same-day registration causes problems with the vote signature and the registration itself. That's a whole different system that makes it impossible, really, to validate the signature. I mean, one person could sign the same name. I mean, I could sign John Smith, I could sign Kay Smith, I could sign, you know, on both things and run 50 ballots that way. And we've got some evidence of that being done as well. Rudy, do you want to speak to the other part of it?
Sure. We have now three overvote analyses done, one for Pennsylvania, one for Michigan, and one for Wisconsin. We're in the process. Oh, I'm sorry, Georgia. We're in the process of doing the others. I'll check to see if it's appropriate for us to make it public.
Well,
I imagine it is, but you could actually do it.
Yeah.
You could do it yourself.
A lot of the analysis comes from the real-time data that came through to the news medias the night and following the election. And some entrepreneurs out there have started crunching data themselves, in addition to multiple experts who could easily recognize, with the mathematical brain that I do not have, the beyond explicable deviations to the point of mathematical impossibility that 186,000 votes come in at once, all for Joe Biden. That's like flipping a coin 186,000 times and it lands on heads every time. That does not happen. There is no reasonable explanation for the upshoots, the straight lines up. I'm not even talking about an angle. I'm talking about some massive straight lines up in the vote tallies in the middle of the night after they've supposedly stopped counting. And that's when the Dominion operators went in and injected votes and changed the whole system. And it affects votes around the country, around the world, and all kinds of massive interests of globalist dictators, corporations, you name it. Everybody's against us except President Trump and we the people of the United States of America.
You've spoken of unleashing the Kraken. Is the country ready for this? I mean, Americans should be astonished at what you're saying here today. Is the country on the verge of an electoral breakdown?
We've already had it. We have already had that electoral breakdown. But the Constitution, as Jenna explains, has provisions in it for how you fix this. And there should never be another election conducted in this country. I don't care if it's for local dog catcher, using a Dominion machine and Smartmatic software. We've got to have an American company that uses paper ballots that we can all verify so every one of us can see that our vote is our vote.
That is all of our time for today. We certainly hope that you're at least a little wiser for having been here. But before we go, we do have some news. iSpy Radio can now be found on your favorite podcast platforms after the show airs on our network of stations around the state. You can find us on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, TuneIn, all the big ones, and we'll be adding some more soon. To find out more, head to iSpyRadio.com to get the links, or just look for us on your favorite platform. We might already be there. Certainly hope that you enjoyed today's show. Please share it, because this is important information, and our country's future hangs in the balance. Don't be silent, because as we say every week, the best information does you no good if you don't use it. Reagan, what do you think?
I do not believe in a fate that will fall on us no matter what we do. I do believe in a fate that will fall on us if we do nothing.
It's more than a show. It's self-defense. The I Spy Radio Show.